Hello and welcome to the Care for the Family podcast with me, Mark Chester, Stephen Hayes.
Good to be here, Mark.
And Tim Madeley.
Good to be here.
Tim is our special guest today, and this is the Dad Cave, where we discuss fatherhood in its varying forms and unpack some of the things that often just don't get talked about. So, Tim, it's really good to have you in the Dad Cave.
Thank
Welcome.
You.
And please, just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, well, I'm Tim, Yorkshireman by birth. Thought I was going to be spending all my life up there, and then ended up moving down to Luton, where I'm a vicar of a church. Recently had a little baby daughter.
Okay, so what's your daughter called?
She's called Hannah.
And so how old is she now?
She is 4.5 months.
And first?
It is our first child. Yeah, yeah.
Fantastic. Oh, well, it's really good
Amanda's
to have you.
My wife, who's at home looking after Hannah.
How is the sleep going?
It's not doing too badly, actually.
That's good.
After about 10 weeks, she started sleeping through. Just about getting to that four-month regression where she decides to sort of scream a bit at night. But
I find like every time your baby stops sleeping well, someone says, oh, yeah, how old are they? 5.25 months. Yeah, there is a 5.25 month regression.
Yeah.
Like there's
yeah.
a regression for every,
yeah.
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 Yeah. Just seems to happen.
Yeah. Wow. We could fill this whole podcast with you two talking about sleep deprivation, couldn't we?
But one thing I have learned is I know why they use sleep deprivation for torture, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It's
tough, isn't
hard
it?
Work. It is
yeah.
hard work.
Yeah. Well, let's start off with the usual thing, which is the dad jokes.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go first because mine's terrible. And so I just want to get it out of the way. And this is mine. Okay. Why was the broom late to class?
Don't know. Why was the broom late to class?
Because it overswept. Yeah, terrible. Oh. I know.
To be honest, Mark, genuine laughter.
Really?
I don't know what it says about both of our humour, but you said that was your worst. I think that was probably your strongest.
Oh, was it?
Overswept.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Charming. Lovely joke.
Yeah. Come on, Stephen. Let's hear yours.
What did Yoda say when he saw himself in 4K?
I don't know. What did Yoda say when he saw himself in 4K?
HDMI.
Did you make that one up? No. You stole it. It's very good.
I made it my own.
Yeah, but I'm sure Tim's is going to be better.
Should I have done the voice? Should we edit in the voice?
Yes, could you do the voice?
Yeah, we'll do it after.
Okay. Right, Tim, over to you.
I'm afraid mine's not much better. I was out the other day and I bought a TV that was secondhand. It said the volume was broken and I just can't turn it down.
Yeah. Oh, that is very good. Yeah, no, I like that one.
Very good. I'd say it's, yeah.
Very
yeah.
good because it's so bad, probably.
Very, well, that's the whole point of a dad joke.
Absolutely,
it's got
it is,
to be
isn't
bad.
It? Yeah, it's
yeah,
got to be
yeah.
bad.
No, I like it. Let's move on to the topic because the topic we're tackling in this episode is traumatic births and dads suffering with postnatal depression. So, Tim, your daughter, Hannah, as you mentioned, is 4 months old. So she was born 4 months ago. Tell us a little bit about your story of what happened during the birth.
Yeah, sure. I mean, we'd been trying for a while, for about 3 years, and then we got the news that Amanda was pregnant. She had a really low-risk pregnancy, and everything was going really swimmingly well. And then it got to the point where labour started, and everything went wrong, really. So we ended up in hospital. Amanda wanted birth by water and gas and air, in a water pooling with gas and air, and basically it all went wrong from there. So she ended up on an epidural. There was meconium in the water, so there was a risk that we might need to go to Great Ormond Street because the meconium can affect the lungs. She was in labour for about 27 hours. It got to the point of pushing, and she was so tired she wasn't able to eat from the epidural that we had to get the doctor in to help. So Hannah was delivered by assisted with the Ventouse. That first one didn't work, it slipped off. They had to sort of make a little cut for her in Amanda to help Hannah come out because she was spine to spine as well, which is a really painful thing where the spine is attached on the mother's spine. And then when she came out, she didn't really pink up either. So she was straight taken out to an incubator outside to be given air, oxygen rather, to try and get her to pink up.
Yeah.
And I was sort of, you know, she came out, she was taken out, I looked at Amanda and said, well, what do I do? Do I stay with you or do I go out to our daughter? And Amanda was like, you know, I'm okay, I'm here, I've got the staff, you go out and look after our daughter.
And so what happened next after that? So you'd gone out to be with Hannah, you'd left Amanda. What happened next?
Well, once Hannah sort of pinked up, they said, why don't you go back and see your wife? So I went back in and saw Amanda. Obviously, we're trying to get the placenta out. that had ruptured, and they were a bit like, just stay out of the way, Dad, because obviously this is, could get serious. And then they looked and said, right, we've been trying for half an hour, we need to get you down to theatre. So they took Amanda down to theatre. I stayed with Hannah and had some skin to skin with her. About 2 minutes later, they came down and said, oh, because of COVID, baby needs to be with the mum. So they took Hannah away from me and realised at that point she'd weed all over me, which is a nice gift from my daughter, the first thing she did.
As they do.
Yeah, as they do, yeah, yeah. So then Hannah went out and I was just left in this room in the delivery suite with all of this blood all over the floor. You know, my wife in theatre, my daughter being taken down to theatre to be with her mum, thinking what on earth just happened over the last sort of few hours.
So what are you feeling at this point?
Fear, anxiety, worry. What's happened? What's going to happen to my wife? Am I going to see my wife again? What's happened to my daughter? Why am I not allowed to be with her? And just, I mean, if I close my eyes, I can still see that room where I was sat in that chair, looking at all that blood on the floor. Yeah. It was awful.
And you're on your own as well.
Yeah, all the midwives are gone. Having been with everything that happened, we were on constant supervision for midwives, constant observation, sorry. And at that point, suddenly everybody had gone. I was just left in this room on my own, having been in a room with about four other people for hours. And, okay, what's just happened? Why is there all this blood? Am I going to see my wife again? Was really what was going through my head at that time.
Wow. So when you get home that night, you've just been through this really traumatic experience. You go home, you're on your own, presumably.
Yeah.
How were you feeling at home there?
It was like, what's just happened? I think, you know, it was a very strange feeling, I think. I mean, I remember when we got home from the hospice after my mum had died, it was like, well, what do I do now? You know, I've no idea. And it was a very similar feeling because I knew at that point Amanda had been taken into the postnatal ward and that I wasn't allowed to go in until 4 o'clock the day after because of COVID. I was only allowed an hour on at the time. And I just sat there thinking,
4 o'clock in the afternoon the next day?
Yeah. Yeah, that's so quite I was only allowed in for that hour. And I remember just sitting there thinking, well, what do I do now? You know, I was just sort of counting down really to about 3:45 when it was time to leave to go to the hospital and see them. And as it happened, when I got there, they said to Amanda, well, you lost a lot of blood. You can either stay in overnight and have a transfusion or you can take iron tablets for 3 months and go home tonight. And obviously Amanda said, well, I'm going home tonight then. They did a check on Hannah. She was slightly elevated on the jaundice levels, but they said, actually, it's okay for her to go home. So I was able to bring them both home with me on that day.
I know, you know, you telling your story, I've heard other guys talk about similar experiences and the trauma that they felt, even going back many, many years ago, and they still feel it today. So I think it'll be a tremendous encouragement just for guys listening to your story to know that they're not alone, that actually this has happened to you as well. And it does happen to other guys. That's still tough for you, and I'm just wondering in the days that followed then what happened for you, because that trauma doesn't go away. You know, I've heard guys talk about it from years ago and they still feel it now. And so what happened to you in those following days then?
Well, actually in the following days things are going to be worse. The day after, it was a 3-day check with midwives, so we went to see them. They weighed Hannah and started panicking because she'd had an 11% weight loss. They did a check on her, and the jaundice was at a level where she needed to go be admitted. So it was, right, you need to go back to hospital now. And I just broke down in tears in front of the midwives at that point, because it was this fact that I was just settling down as a new family.
Yeah.
And then suddenly wife and daughter were going to have to go back into hospital. And the midwife said, oh, are you okay? And I said, well, actually, no, I'm not. You know, I've been really struggling with all this stuff that's happened these last few days. And she went, oh, well, talk to your GP. You know, they'll get you some support in about 6 to 8 weeks or maybe a bit longer because of COVID. How are you doing, Amanda? And I was like, well, I'm doing fine. She said, okay, well, if you're not, let us know, because we've got a list of about 10 different people or organisations you can ring to get some support. And I sort of sat there thinking, well, hang on a minute. You know, I'm a new parent as well, and there is no support here for me. Something's wrong there. And I think Amanda noticed that as well. And when we went home to pack the bag and drive to the hospital, and we sort of said, actually, that needs to change, because that's not right, really. There should be support for dads as well, because we, you know, we go through that watching our wives giving birth, watching them going through all sorts of pain, and yet there's no way of processing that.
Yeah, and I think it's almost that sense of, you can always, I think because it's the woman who gives birth and it's the trauma and all the hormonal stuff. So it's, because I think I felt the same. And it wasn't that and I know you're not saying this as well, you don't want them to have less, but there should be some consideration to the dad, because it's amazing how, one, hormonally, there is a connect, like as soon as your baby's born, there is that instant, like, I want to protect this child. I'm worried about your wife, about her physically, emotionally, all the other stuff, and then trying to keep it all together. And it's like, of course, the guy also feels all that stuff. But it's often not even talked about. A health visitor will come out and routinely say, how are you doing, you know, mentally and all that stuff. And it's not even a tick on a sheet to think about that stuff. But it's pretty common, isn't it, Mark?
Yeah, I think it is. I just listening to you both talk, I think, you know, we want to feel involved in the lives of our children, don't we? Right from the off, we're dads. Yeah. We're emotionally invested. We love our kids, you know, right from the off. We want to feel involved. And I think when the process means that you almost put to one side and made to feel like, well, actually your role is to be here and be an observer and just come in when we need you, but then stand aside, and because this is about mums and the health professionals, I think it's then that we feel excluded. I know, you know, I mean, my kids are 24 and 20, so this was many years ago now, but I remember in the process of when Sue was pregnant with Meg, going to the hospital for an appointment with a consultant. And when we got into the consulting room, there were two chairs. There was one for the consultant and one for Sue. So I stood in the corner of the room. The consultant didn't make eye contact with me once through the whole...
It's bizarre, isn't it?
The whole consultation. Yeah. And the message I got today was that, actually, this isn't for you. This is, you just need to stand and watch, really.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, you mentioned a good midwife. We had a really good midwife who made me feel very included. Mm. And I think there is power in making someone feel included and needed. Mm. I think that, you know, when you feel needed, then that's really, that really sort of builds you up and makes you want to do even more. I know the Fatherhood Institute have done some research recently into the sort of maternity services and fathers' experience of maternity services through the pandemic. And they found that 84% of mothers said that the restrictions meant they'd receive less support than they needed or wanted from the fathers of their children or partners. So the mothers themselves are saying they need fathers to be there, aren't they? They're saying it absolutely helps them. It helps mother and it helps baby for the father to be involved. It would be great to have more involvement, wouldn't it? I'm conscious, Tim, you then, at some point you realised you needed some help because that trauma had a longer impact on you, didn't it?
It did.
So tell us about that.
I mean... When they finally were released, because it almost felt like they were being kept prisoner in there. Yeah, so I don't mean to use, I know it's quite a strong term to use, but that's how it felt at the time.
Yeah.
And I think it was when they got home after that time, and then it got to the point of the 10-day checkup where the health visitor came, and I noticed I was getting incredibly anxious. And Amanda looked at me and said, well, is that because every single appointment we've had since Hannah's been born, or every single medical intervention has always been a problem? And I was waiting for the health visitor to come in and say, there's a problem, you've got to go back to hospital.
So your ceiling was almost like so short because you were expecting bad
I was
news.
Expecting the worst.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm quite good at catastrophizing anyway. but I was expecting the worst. And I think we got through that appointment. The health visitor was absolutely fantastic. Interesting, they did ask me, said, how are you getting on? Which was really nice, again, to be included.
Yeah.
But after that, she went. And then I looked at Amanda and I just burst into tears again and went, thank goodness. And then we realized that perhaps something wasn't quite right because I was on a very, very short fuse, you know, just randomly bursting into tears. I'm an introvert by nature, but I was fine. I didn't even want to go out of the house. And we thought, actually, something might be up here. Now, originally, I'd planned my 2 weeks paternity leave and 2 weeks annual leave. Hannah was due at the end of July. So I thought, we'll take August off, go back to work. She came 2 weeks early. And I mean, obviously being a vicar, I just spoke to senior clergy and said, I can't come back yet. I was just in such a state. And they were just like, well, you know, take a bit more time if you need it. And then just as we thought we were over the worst of it, we then got a call from Great Ormond Street. He said, oh, you know, my name's Lindsay. I'm calling from Great Ormond Street. Have you read the information about the heel prick test? Mm-hmm. And Hannah was then subsequently diagnosed with cystic fibrosis. Mm-hmm. And that just completely broke me. I think that was the point where I just was completely broken. They asked us to go down to Great Ormond Street the day after to do a couple of extra tests to clarify. And when they said she has it, I just shouted and swore at them, said things that shouldn't come out of a vicar's mouth. And I didn't, you know, I won't repeat them.
Yeah.
And they were like, are you okay? And I was like, no, I'm not. And I got home from that appointment. Amanda knows me quite well. She's like, you need to go out for a walk. So I went out for a walk and I just walked around the fields behind our house and was just crying my eyes out. I dread to think what people must have thought of me. And there's a hill, Warden Hill in Luton. I just walked up to there and just screamed at the top of my voice. Just that all that anger and angst and stuff was just there. And I think from that point on, I started becoming quite aggressive towards the medical staff, particularly Great Ormond Street. Not shouting at them, but when we were at home, my language was quite aggressive. Like, oh, they just want to steal Hannah from us. You know, I was when we met them, I was fine. So I don't want people to think I was getting aggressive to them because I wasn't, because I know that they're there to help. And actually,
but your anger with the situation.
It was the situation, I think, is probably a better way of putting it. Yeah, it was. And I just felt to be in a very, very dark place.
Because I think there is some sense of when you go through stuff like that, I think there's a reasonable degree to which you want to pull up the drawbridge and be like, I just want to keep everyone in the house, keep everyone safe.
Yeah.
But it obviously went beyond that.
Yeah.
Were you given just to kind of, because I don't know much about cystic fibrosis, so people listening or watching might not. So what was the upshot of that diagnosis in the moment? Like, how much did you understand of what they were telling you?
That's where I think Great Ormond Street are very, very good. I mean, I know they're a world-leading hospital, and I've really seen that over the last few months. So they said, right, we're giving you some big news. You're going to go away, and then we'll invite you back in a few days to do what they call an education day,
okay,
where you meet the team, so the dietitian, the physio, the nurse, the doctor, and you get to ask all of your questions. So we went home and sort of wrote out all our questions. When we went back, we met them. We also met the psychologist there who will look after Hannah as she's growing up till she transitions to adult services, because she will be under care throughout her entire life. And she also supports the parents. And when she came in, she said, how are you doing? And I just broke down. And she goes, right, we need to do something here, don't we? And she actually said to me one of the most helpful pieces of advice that I was given, because she said, if you're in the street and somebody comes and attacks you and tries to punch you, your instant reaction is to defend yourself. She said, essentially, what we've done with this diagnosis is whacked you over the head with a baseball bat. So your instinct is to defend yourself, which is why you see us as the enemy. She says, you are acting perfectly normally. That is how we would expect a parent to act.
Mm.
And the moment she said that I was reacting normally, it was almost that permission to feel how I felt.
Yeah.
And then, you know, over the last few months, we've seen them a few times. They've been out for home visits, and they're such a great team, and the support that they offer us both and Hannah is absolutely outstanding. And I can see why people speak so highly of Great Ormond Street, because I really do. Mm-hmm. And I think in some ways we feel quite fortunate to be in Luton, because we fall under their catchment area.
Yeah.
It's not that Hannah's, you know, especially ill. It's just Luton comes under their catchment area, so we're with that team.
Mm. Yeah.
But I mean, it wasn't an instant get over that. You know, I did have to go through quite a process, and it took me a couple of months. I did have to take a bit more time off work.
Yeah.
It took me a while till I was sort of got back. I mean, I'm still on the recovery now, as we're speaking today.
I think that acknowledgement of how you're feeling is so powerful, because there will be people listening and watching to this who feel the same, but perhaps haven't been able to put a sort of a name on it or rationalize it. So, postnatal depression occurs in dads as well as mums, doesn't it? And some of the symptoms of that, some of the things you've talked about, irritability, anger, but there can be other things like poor sleep and lack of motivation, just persistent low mood, poor concentration, sort of feelings of guilt and worthlessness. And people who are listening and watching might be feeling some of these things. You know, they might be struggling to bond with the baby, and or they might want to be out of the house more. They may be drinking a bit more, smoking more, whatever. I mean, some of these things aren't necessarily indications that they are depressed, but they could be, couldn't they?
It's 1 in 10, isn't it? It's 1 in 10 is the best guess, but then it's how many undiagnosed cases are there? But you'd wager a fair few more. It'd be good to talk a little bit about the road to recovery. But before we pivot into that, we usually ask just some quick fire questions just okay. to give us all a bit of a breather, because it is man, this stuff is heavy stuff, but it's great to discuss. But we like to get to know our guests.
Yeah,
well.
Sure.
And this feature is proving to unearth some surprising truths about people. So I'm just going to ask you a couple of questions now. I think, Mark, should we pivot into the that next stage? So Tim, it'd be great to know, right, what is your favorite film?
Transformers.
So that's funny. TV show?
24.
Good choice. Song?
Probably Waymaker.
Very good. Breakfast cereal?
Don't tend to eat cereals.
A cartoon character?
It's got to be Tom and Jerry.
Favourite book?
Jurassic Park.
Favourite rodent?
Ooh. Don't know, actually.
I'd go for a squirrel myself.
See, the first thing that popped into my mind was mice, but it's because our cats bring them in.
So. Oh, no.
I don't really want to say that.
No, that's not good.
I don't know.
Well, we now know a bit more about you. Transformers, that was very decisive.
Oh, yeah, I've seen it far too many times.
Wow.
Yeah, you don't very often get asked in life, what's your favourite rodents, do you?
No, that was what threw me, I think.
Only in the dad cave.
I think that's another thing we don't get asked enough.
Let's move on and talk a little bit about your recovery.
Yeah.
I guess, would you label what you were struggling with as postnatal depression? And if so, how then did you sort of tackle that?
I probably would put that label on it as postnatal depression. I think I did wonder if it was sort of post-traumatic stress because of the situation around the birth. But I think what I basically said to Amanda, well, I've just got to do something about this because I knew I wasn't right. I mean, one of the things you said, you know, that people kept asking me is, what are you like with Hannah? And no matter how bad I was feeling, as soon as I gave her a cuddle, everything felt right again until she started screaming, and I just couldn't cope with her screaming, and I just had to walk out of the room. But I think it got to the point where I said to Amanda, right, I just need to get some help on this. So I rung my GP and spoke to them, and I explained the situation of what had been going on. Went through a little bit of the birth story with them, and he said, well, actually, I think, you know, you may be suffering from postnatal depression. And I was like, oh, well, is that possible in men? You know, because I've only, like you're saying, it's not that well known about. And he said, well, yeah, the GP just went, well, of course it is, because you have all that change and your paternal instincts kick in. You know, you go through a change as a person. You're no longer just responsible for yourself and your wife. You've suddenly got this new life to look after, and it's quite a big thing. He said, so of course it is. He said, you know, what's your take on antidepressants? I said, well, if I need them, I need them. So he put me on some of those. We had a bit of a chat about what to go on. And he said, what about talking therapy? I said, well, actually, as a vicar, I've got access to counselling through the diocese. And he said, well, they'll probably get it a lot quicker than us because it's going to take, you know, we've got quite a long wait at the moment. So I sort of had that chat with him. And then I went to the senior clergy and said, right, you know, the GP told me this. Is there any support available? And they got me in touch with a counselling team that they have. And I got into a counsellor about a week later. Been seeing him every week since. And I think that has been really, really helpful because we were exploring not just why I reacted like I did, but almost what in my past has led to these reactions coming out now. And I think it sort of seems that actually I've probably been carrying a bit of anger from earlier and I just never actually let it out. And I suppose he said it was almost like a pot that was simmering and Hannah's birth was that catalyst that's the pot sort of exploded.
And how has Amanda found it? Like when you said this is what they've said on, you know, after that phone call when they said, well, we think it's probably postnatal depression, you need to speak to someone, maybe get some medical help. How is Amanda hearing all that? Was she expecting that, or was it kind of like?
I think she was. I mean, I know it's said a lot, but we know each other, probably know each other better than we know ourselves, and she says she can read me like a book. I mean, yeah. I can't surprise her with anything because I usually get so excited I actually tell her. So I think she obviously knew that something was up. I mean, I think being a pharmacist, she's obviously seen the medical side of it as well.
Yeah.
And actually, it was her that said after that first time I talked to the GP, she said, my sleep was really bad. She had to go back to the GP and ask for some help with sleeping. And they did prescribe me with something to help with sleep. And I think it was a combination of that with the counselling and knowing that Amanda was there and was supporting me through this, that actually I was able to come round to where I am now. But I think it's interesting because I think Amanda's been very strong for me. I feel guilty that I've not been strong for her. And I carry that guilt now. And also I feel guilty that actually I've left her with Hannah. You know, cause to me, actually a husband and father, it's the important thing is to look after my wife and my daughter. And I wasn't in a place to do that. But I mean, I just, you know, she's been incredibly supportive and I can't thank her enough for that. Mm. You know, and obviously we have worked through, obviously she's obviously had to deal with the diagnosis as well. We're working through that as a couple together now. And obviously now I'm in a better place. I'm still not there yet, but now I'm in a better place. We're able to talk with each other. And yeah. We are very good at communicating. I think that's really important in any relationship is the communication aspect.
Yeah.
You know, and we're often talking about the big things because there's no point hiding that.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm wondering, Tim, what would you say to other guys who might be feeling the same? They might be listening to this and thinking and wondering and thinking, yeah, I can recognise some of that, but I don't know what to do. What would you say they should do?
I would say don't be afraid of ringing the GP. They're not going to laugh at you. I mean, I said to Amanda when I first met, I said, there's no point telling them. They'll just laugh at me and say, grow up. But actually, I found my GP to be very supportive. So I would say to anyone listening, if you're feeling like that, don't be afraid to speak out. You know, there is that taboo about mental health, but it's important that we start speaking about it. Yeah. You know, I love the tagline, it's okay not to be okay. Mm-hmm. And I think it should be spoken about more. So if there's somebody listening that thinks, actually, is that me? Talk to your GP. Pick up the phone and talk to them and don't be afraid of having to go down the medical route or counselling because to me it's what's got me out of that hole I was in.
Yeah. And if somebody thinks they're failing in doing that, they feel like they're failure, it's really clear, isn't it, that they're not failing. Mm. They're not failing at all. Speaking up when you're experiencing a difficulty, that's not a failure, is it?
No,
that's
it's actually a sign of strength.
It's a real strong thing to do.
Yeah, for you to take that step in and of itself is a strong move because there's no point going further down that rabbit hole when you know there's help available.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it's really important to speak up, to talk to people and to get some help. Tim, I think that's a good place to sort of draw the podcast to a close.
Yeah,
but
sure.
Before we finish, we always ask a question and it's this. If you could pass on one object, one passion, one interest, one hobby to Hannah, what would it be?
Well, as a vicar, I guess my fates are given.
yes.
I mean, for me, you're going to find out a bit more about me now. I'm an absolute avid supporter of the Tour de France. Hannah was born during the Tour de France on the day before the last stage. And I would love to just pass on that passion of cycling to her because I'm one of these that when I'm watching the Tour highlights, it's like, you know, don't speak. I want to see what's going on. And I'd love to pass that passion on to her to just enjoy watching that race because it's the greatest race in the world.
That's lovely. Thanks, Tim.
Thank you.
Tim, it's very clear that you're a fantastic father. You want to be the best father that you can be. And all of this journey is working towards being a good dad to Hannah. And we're really grateful to you for coming into the Dad Cave and sharing your story openly.
Absolutely.
And so honestly. And I think it will have an enormous impact on people who are listening and watching. It's been a fantastic podcast, hasn't it, Stephen?
Yeah, it really has. And I know it's in Care for the Family, we have people who work in all sorts of bereavement and every time they share their story it helps people, but it's also there's that personal hit you take. And I think for you to do this today, it's a bit of a personal hit to go through it all again, but it will help people, so we're really grateful.
It's been very courageous, hasn't it? So thank you, Tim.
Well, thank you for giving me the opportunity.
It's been great. Thank you. And that was another episode of the Dad Cave. So thank you for listening and watching, and please join us next time.